like, what is it? Like, why did you say no? Are you scared to go? He's like, well, yeah, like, it's far from home. It's far from home. And we sat down and we discussed the details and we made arrangements. And it's not easy. I mean, there were days he couldn't leave the house, forget getting to Toronto. And he ended up going. And it was an amazing, amazing opportunity for him to speak over there. Our daughter graduated in Montreal for high school. We made a trial run to go to Montreal. He hadn't left Ottawa since the accident. This was a few years later. We made a trial run to make sure that he could get to Montreal and back safely, you know, with a caregiver and with all of his medical equipment and with everything else. And he spoke at my daughter's graduation. And it was then that you realized that when you go through something so intense, the intense things are that much more intense. As intense as the hard times were, as intense as the trauma was, so too you have to learn to appreciate and realize just how the small things and the beautiful things just have a more intensity to them also. And I'm speaking to you now, it's 9.5 years, like a little, you know, I've grown a lot along the way, but I want to backtrack a little bit, and we'll probably jump around a little bit too. At the beginning of my journey, at the beginning of all of this, there was a gathering, something like this, at the Colel in Ottawa. They had brought in one of those videos, somebody was speaking about challenging times. So my friend decided she was going to schlep me along to this speech. And I didn't want to go hear a speech about challenging times, thank you very much, because I was the speech for some challenging times, you know? And she's like, Shangel, even if you don't listen, you have to get out of the house. You have to get out. I said, fine. She convinced me. I go. I'm sitting in the room. I wasn't feeling very social. I was just sitting there. And I don't remember the name of the speaker. And I keep meaning to find out. And I think I even did find out, and I forgot again, so I have to find out again. And the woman was speaking. And she said that before a person comes down to this world, before a person is born, the neshama is shown a video, so to speak, of their life, of what's going to happen to them while they're down here on this earth. And the neshama watches it, and the neshama says, yes, I agree to that, because I recognize that I am a neshama, and I have to go into a human body to fulfill my tachlis, to fulfill my potential. And I see that based on everything that, you know, you're showing me and that you're describing to me, that, wow, that's really going to help me become who I'm supposed to be. So the neshama says yes, and the neshama agrees to get put into a body. And at that point, I don't think I heard anything else at the speech, because I was so focused on what I heard right then. Because until that point, I had been saying to people, I didn't sign up for this. I so did not sign up for this. Yeah, someone said, okay, who wants to be the wife of a quadriplegic? Pick me, oh yeah, me. I didn't sign up for this, like, no. And then when I heard those words, I was sitting there like, I signed up for this. And I remember for the rest of the evening, I sat there. Literally, the video was over. They turned on the lights, and everybody left. And I was sitting there thinking, I signed up for this. And that was just like a lightning bolt for me. It just really shook me to the core and made me realize, well, if I signed up for this, well, then by golly, I said I was going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm a little bit competitive by nature, so I was like, okay, well then, I'm gonna do this. And it was a competition. It became a competition against myself and the outside world about how am I going to do this. And that really, really struck me. And it was something that I took with me, that I signed up for this. And I think it's a message that, you know, hits home for anything. You know, I had friends that were afraid to call me because, you know, their washing machine was overflowing, and Shandel, that's nothing compared to a quadriplegic husband. Like, yeah, but I get it. Like, my washing machine also overflows. Like, you can talk to me. Like, I'm normal, you know? So, like, I get it. And that's kind of helped me, you know, strike that balance between the hard days and the harder days and the not so hard days. But that's all, you know, it was all became relative depending on what was going on, you know, how we rated it. Like towards the end, it was like if my husband woke up in the morning and we were home, it was a good day. If he went to sleep at home at night, it was a good day. So as long as he was home, things were good, despite everything else that was going on. Another something that really struck me was a pasuk that I was preparing when I was teaching. I teach the junior high girls in Ottawa, and we were learning Parshas Ve'eschanan. And in Parshas Ve'eschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu is davening to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of Bnei Yisrael, who certainly understood the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the importance of Eretz Yisrael and the gift that Hashem was giving to the Jewish people, wanted very badly to be part of that. And he knew about all the mitzvos that were taught by Eretz and about the mitzvos that he would be able to keep there and the Kedusha of the land, and he davened over 500 times for Hashem to let him in. And Hashem did not want him to go in. Hashem said, this is not for you. And, you know, we're not going to go into all the Mefarshim and everything about that right now. But the part that stuck with me was that I was looking in the Rashi, and Moshe is davening, and finally Hashem says to Moshe, these are words of the Rashi, he says, Rav Tov Hatzafun Lecha. There is something better hidden away for you. I have something better for you. Moshe Rabbeinu, you are the Gadol Hadar. You were up on Har Sinai three times for 40 days each. You brought down the Luchos. You did Kriyas Yamsuf. You saved Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. You brought the 10 Makos. You think you know what's good for you? I have something better for you. And, you know, we think about Eretz Yisrael. We think we want to go to the coast, and we go to Kever Rachel, and, you know, maybe they'll go on a dune buggy, whatever, you know, whatever it is about Eretz Yisrael that we know is so kadosh, and we all want to go there and have some fun while we're there. Moshe Rabbeinu was beyond that. Like, anything that we think is kadosh about Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu was beyond that, and he wanted that. And certainly, we could appreciate why he wanted to go. We all want to go. And Hashem said, Rav Tov Hatzafun Lecha, I have something better for you. And I sat there in my seat when I was preparing, and I said to myself, you can see I talk a lot to myself, so don't tell anybody, but it works. It's a good secret, it's a coping technique, talk to yourself. So I said to myself, I have something better for you. I have something better for you. I thought I knew what I wanted. I thought I knew my way that I'm supposed to serve Hashem. I thought that serving Hashem meant being able-bodied and having an able-bodied husband who can walk and who can move. But Hashem said, mm-mm, Shango, I have something better for you. I don't know what it is. It's hidden. Rav Tov Hatzafun Lecha. I may never know what that purpose is, but I know that there is a purpose. And that was something that really, really stuck with me. And I wrote it on a piece of paper, and I hung it on my fridge on a magnet, because it meant so much to me. And I actually had them professionally printed, I'll give them out to you after, on magnets. Just something that I have to remind myself, and if it helps you, I'm happy to help you too. I have something better for you. When something is not going our way, we don't know why. And as my husband said, I don't need to know why, but what does Hashem want me to do now? What is Hashem asking of me at this point? And that was the whole mahus of my husband, was that he tried to figure out what does Hashem want of him now. Like, he thought that being Mekadeshem Shemayim was one way, but, you know, if I dare say, and I'm not the only one who said it, he was Mekadeshem Shemayim multiple times over in his paralyzed condition than before. My husband started a blog. It's on there also. It's called Roaming Rabbi. And he talked about his experiences about being a quadriplegic. He put Divrei Torah in there, Divrei Chizuk in there. There are pictures in there. And he showed a community what it was like to be a Ben Torah when everything is going against you. And we had such close friends in the community, people who were so touched by him, people who would come, you know, the days that he was able to get to shul, people would come running out of shul to have the privilege of pushing his wheelchair, holding the door open for him, We had a rotation of friends who came every day for almost 7 years to put tefillin on him and to learn with him every single day. And people who took him out places, and people he gave, he learned with people. And he was actually, he was, I think he's been in, you know, Mishpacha magazine, and not in Bina, but in all the others, he's been in Mishpacha and Yotzer and Hamodia and, you know, like so many of the Jewish periodicals. But he was even picked up on CBC. So the CBC is the Canadian Broadcasting Company. So there's like a syndicated, it's broadcast like all throughout the whole Canada. And he got picked up, his story got picked up. They came to our house, they interviewed him. And before he, when he came home for Pesach, that first year when he came home, and they say, I forgot how many hundreds of thousands of people listened to that broadcast. It was broadcasted many times that day. And they played it every year, Erev Pesach again, and then they played it in his honor the day of his Levaya. So, you know, we don't know what a Kiddush Hashem is and what it means, like, to be an Oved Hashem. And in fact, when I had to come up with, you know, the writing that we were going to put on his kever, you know, how do you put into words everything that happened? And I remember thinking, okay, he was always talking about Eved Hashem, Eved Hashem. So one of the chazals that I wanted to put on there, and it's the first line on there, is Ani Avdecha Ben Amasecha. And what I didn't know was that when we had the Hakamas Matseva and his sister was there, she said, do you know that a few years back my nephew had interviewed him for a school assignment? And he was pretty bold. I don't know if this was actually a question that he had to ask or if he was just brave enough to ask him, because it was something that I never asked him. He said, what would you want written on your kever? And he said, Eved Hashem. And I had goosebumps up and down my spine, and I still do, and I burst out crying because it was such a nechama to me that I got it right. You know, that... How do I know if I got it right? How am I doing him justice to put it on his kever? It's his perpetuality. And it was just a real nechama for me to know that's what he wanted. So I guess I want to share with you maybe a few things that I learned along the way. If we still have time, are we out of time? Go a little bit longer? We're okay? So I wanted to just share with you a few things, and you know, maybe they could help you along, you know, through life. So those two things that we talked about are the two main ones. Another thing that we had was in my husband's office, when the accident happened, we were living in a home with a lot of steps. It was split level, and it wasn't accessible at all. So we had to move, and we had to move to a house that was more accessible, and we had to renovate to make it more open concept so that he could get around. And we designed for him, he called it his command center. So his command center was the room that had his therapy equipment and his computer. Because he was limited with the use of his hands, he had a voice-activated computer. He spoke with Dragon, he would speak into the computer, and it would type. And he was a perfectionist. If it didn't pass his inspection, he would erase and go back and type. It could sometimes take days to do one blog post. It could take days. And the last 2.5 years of his life, he was on a respirator. When he was on a respirator, he couldn't talk. He wasn't able to be weaned again from the respirator the second time around. And he used an eye-gaze computer. So he did letter by letter. So if you look at any of the later posts, you have to understand that those were not spoken, which was a task of itself. But there's paragraphs of like, flowery and poetic and meaningful paragraphs that were done one letter at a time. And if he would look at something, he would have to like linger on the letter for it to click. And if he would turn his gaze and he would linger on the back button, he would all get deleted. And he would have to start again from the beginning. So the man was dealing with frustration continuously. But what I say about him is that just like they say the story of Hillel is mechayev the aniyim, that just like people can't say, well, I was too poor to learn, so I had to No, because Hillel went up on the roof in a snowstorm and got buried in the snow to learn Torah. So Hillel's mechayev you. So my husband was mechayev the I can'ts. He could not. There was very little that he could do for himself on his own. In fact, the word that I was introduced to soon after the accident was complete assist. If I was to take him to any appointment or anywhere, I was to tell the personnel complete assist, and they would know that he couldn't do anything. So basically, one of the things that he couldn't do was to move his arms. They were stuck like this. And over time, with therapy, he was able to slowly bring his arms up and closer and closer. The goal, the therapy goal, was to enable him to bring his arm to his mouth to self-feed. He had a different goal. His goal was to go higher than his mouth so he could cover his eyes by himself to say Shema. And it was an effort for him. And he worked so hard to be able to do that. Like, it's every day. People would come and daven with him, put on tefillin, and pick his arm up to say Shema. And he would say, he said, even he needed help to be dressed, he said he would always, as long as he was able, even if he wasn't dressing himself, he would move his arm as much as he could, like move his head, said, I am going to be as independent as possible. And it wasn't very possible. So he was the mechayev that I can't. And it's something that I shared with my students. They're in elementary school, they're in high school. I can't, Mrs. Symes, I can't. Like, girls, you can. Let's come up with a new expression. Like, I need help or whatever, something to make it more. It's not that you can't, you can. And slowly, slowly, after months and months of therapy, he was able to bring up his hands to say Shema by himself. There was such a charge in that room, like I had goosebumps up my spine. I had to turn away because I felt like I was standing in the Beis HaMikdash. I felt like I was on Admas Kodesh, like by the Sneh. Like there was such Kedusha in the room, I couldn't look. I felt like I was imposing on something so private and so personal that here a man who's been beaten and knocked down time and time again lifts his hands to his eyes to block out everything and say Shema. I said, like, it has to be a zechus for him. Like, to someone, V'yahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol mida u'mida shemodeit l'cha. It's like, Hashem, this is it. You know, this is it. And, you know, so many ways that he thought his chance was over. But so many new outlets were open for him. Again, not something that we would have planned, not something that we would have, you know, anticipated. It was definitely very, very unanticipated. But how much of a difference he really made, and how much of an inspiration he really was to everybody. And, you know, just along the way, they say, you know, Hashem tested us. But Hashem was there for us. And Hashem is there for all of us in our day-to-day life. And just looking out for the Hashgacha Pratis, looking out for what we call the kisses from Hashem, hugs from Hashem, how Hashem took care of us because he knew that he was testing us in one way, so he didn't test us in another way. Over the years that my husband was sick, my kids were never sick. I didn't have to take them to the doctor. My car never died down. Our car was, you know, pretty old. The car kept on ticking. All kinds of things, you know. My kids were young, and I went. My daughter in high school was having her production. Perm time, she was having her production, and of course, it meant a lot for her mother to be there at her production. So I literally made arrangements to be gone for 24 hours, like to the second. You know, to the second. Like I was gonna go drive 4 hours to Rochester, see the play, sleep over, do some shopping, and 4 hours back to be home in time to, you know, make sure that I was there to take care of everything that needed to be taken care of. So on the way, my kids were still little then, I was able to get away with this. You know, there were stores, Marshalls, TJ Maxx, whatever it is. And I said, okay, Pesach is coming. The little kids are gonna start asking about clothes for Yom Tov. What am I gonna do? I said, Hashem, I'm stopping in TJ Maxx. I have this much time, but this much. I walked into TJ Maxx, And wouldn't you know, there were three of the exact same dresses in three different sizes. Mm-hmm. I grabbed them, I paid, I ran out. I was like, that doesn't happen. You can't go shopping for your kids in 5 minutes or less. It doesn't happen, you know? School shoes, you know, like every mom's nightmare. Come September, oh no, school shoes. Literally, I went into the store. The kids saw the shoes they liked. They picked them out, and we went home. It hasn't happened since. And it never happened before. I was like, look, Hashem is taking care of us. Hashem, like, see, I can handle this much, barely, that's it. You know, Hashem sent us the clothes, and Hashem sent us the sneakers, and Hashem sent all the things that we just look out for. All of these hugs from Hashem, they're there. They are there. We got to, you know, you get a parking spot right in front. I don't know if that's such a problem here, but in New York, you get a parking spot right in front of where you need to go. You know, Hashem is sending us a hug. Hashem is taking care of us. And it's a message that I try to mention at least once a day to my kids. Look how Hashem is taking care of us. Look how Hashem loves us. Look. You know, we got this and this. You wanted that? Look at that. You know, you wanted in the, you know, you wanted from your go-roll, whatever, from your grab bag, whatever it was. And just to, like, look out for those things that Hashem is taking care of us and Hashem helps us. But back to the command center. Sorry, I got distracted. So he had a wall that we ended up calling his chizuk wall, because for every speech that he gave, and for every talk that he gave, whether in person or on Skype, that there was a flyer for, we hung it on the wall. And any magazine or any article that was written about him in the newspaper was hanging on the wall. Just as chizuk, just to show him, it wasn't a bragging wall. It was a wall of showing, look, you spoke here, you can do this, you reached those people. You went here, you did that. And I'll end off with the final, you know, thing. He went here, he went there. It was now, I think 5 years ago, when he was still well, when he was at his peak, so to speak. My niece in Israel, his sister's only daughter, got engaged. And she was going to get married in Israel Hanukkah time. And this was like Tishrei time. And I had a whole plan in my head that I am going to this wedding. I have not been to Eretz Yisrael in ages. I deserve vacation. I'm going to this chasana. But I'm going to make sure that I have all the details arranged in advance so that he can't, you know, just so he's going to get nervous that I'm leaving. I'm, you know, 6,000 miles away. I'll figure it all out in advance. I'll get the caregivers. I'll get friends to come and stay. I'll farm out the kids. Whatever. I'm going to the chasana. So Sukkot comes and my whole family comes, my sisters, their spouses, my parents. Everybody's at the table, everyone's in the sukkah, and we're sitting there, and my husband says something about when I go to the wedding. And everyone's, like, jaw dropped. Everyone's jaw dropped, like, and like, you describe, you know, the jaw drop and the spoon in the air, like, that's what it looked like. The entire sukkah froze, and we're all like, and I said, excuse me? He's like, yeah, when I go to Osnat's wedding. I said, and I'm just stared at him because in my head I'm thinking, shoot, there goes my vacation. And my sister, who knew about my plan, is thinking, oh no. So he said, yeah, I told you I was going to the wedding, didn't I? I said, no, I think you forgot to mention it. So he's like, nope, I'm going. And I'm like, you're kidding, right? He's like, no, I'm going. And I'm thinking, this is the man that had to take a practice run to go to Montreal, 2 hours away. We had to convince that he could go to Toronto, and he thinks I'm taking him to Eretz Yisrael. I said, okay, we'll talk about it after Yantif. And I went to my room, I'm like, ah! You know. Well, guess what? He went. It was his reaching the moon. He said, I am beating quadriplegia. I am going to Eretz Yisrael. I am going to be at that chasana. And he worked so hard at his therapy and at his exercises. And we had to get all kinds of letters from his doctors to let him fly and all kinds of things to make it happen. Like, his therapist made us promise that, you know, almost I'd be doing this, like, I'm not so technologically savvy, but, like, I'd be doing this in real time. They're like, you gotta, like, let us know, like, did you get to the airport? Did you get to Toronto? Did you get on the next plane? And we have stories like you can't imagine of how he ended up getting to Eretz Yisrael. But that was his Mount Everest. He went to Eretz Yisrael. And see pictures of him at the Kosel, picture of him davening at the Kosel, and at the Hasana, there's a whole story about how he almost missed the Hasana because he ended up in the hospital, but you know, that's a whole other story. And he got Bracha Achrita at the Hasana when he got up there, and his voice was changed because of the accident. He couldn't carry enough volume in his diaphragm because it was paralyzed, so he was more raspy, and he couldn't, like, would have to take more breaths in between the words. When he got up there and, you know, saying the Bracha Achrita, it was unbelievable. It was really, really something to behold. So it's getting late. I could talk for hours, but I'm not going to do that to you. But I just wanted to leave you with some inspiration and some magnets, and just to wish all of you well and Hatzlacha and Bracha in everything that you do. And you should see success in everything that you do.
By the way, she has a daughter that's engaged, just getting married in a month.
In 4 months.
I'll help you.